on Friday night, I had the opportunity to attend Green Hope High School's homecoming game. And what stood out to me while I was at that game was not necessarily the football. They didn't do so hot in that, but it was the band. And I was going to insert here a little, don't worry, Green Hope football fans. I am a Duke football fan, so I understand what it means to lose, but we actually won last night, so I won't do that. Anyway, the band had an extraordinary halftime show, and it really stood out to me. They set it up at the beginning so that the band members and the color guard were all on the field together interwoven. And the dancers were dressed all in white with flowing dresses and large feather-like flags that they twirled around. Approaching the center of the field was a Snow White-esque queen greeting her fair followers. The music was pleasant and gentle, and the band turned to face her as she took her throne. And then suddenly, almost from out of nowhere in the corner of the field, appears a villain queen in her red and black dress. The once white-robed dancers have changed and emerged from a corner wearing gray and carrying raven-shaped flags, and then they changed over to flags that looked like flames of fire. As the villain queen comes into sight, the drums of the band beat louder and louder and basically kill out the gentle music that had followed or that had preceded. The villain queen overthrew the good queen from her throne, and the number ended with a loud, dominant bang of music. And that was it. That was the end of the halftime show. Good didn't win. Seriously, it was a brilliant move on their part. We all expected the white queen to come out and triumph over evil, and she didn't. And it kind of reminded me of today's Old Testament reading, if you think about it. The end of the passage, there sits poor old Job on the ash heap, scratching his oozing wounds with a broken piece of pottery. In the previous chapter, he has lost all that he ever had, and in this chapter, he is inflicted head to toe with disease, and he is in pain and grief. And that's it. That's the end of our passage. There's no silver lining. God does not swoop in to save one of God's most faithful followers. In fact, God doesn't actually stop Satan from harming him at all. And as much as I'd like to offer you words of consolation about the distinction between the Old Testament God of wrath and the New Testament God of grace and love, I cannot, in all honesty, do that. Theologian Phyllis Trible writes, "The God of Israel is the same God of Jesus, and in both testaments resides a tension between divine wrath and divine love. The God that we see in the Old Testament is the same God that we see in the New Testament." Likewise, Scripture in itself presents to us a challenge. Just look at any work of art. It's like a reflection of both beauty and repulsiveness in life. Likewise, Scripture holds within it tales of holiness and tales of horror. Because life itself is stuffed with holiness and horror. For every mark of beauty we find, I'm sure there is an atrocity that can counteract it. And I think that sometimes we forget about that. Sometimes we forget the fragility of life, and sometimes we think that God will deliver us safe and sound because we have faith. And to a certain extent, it's our contemporary society, it's the contemporary society's fault for teaching us that if we do good things or because we love God well enough, God will protect us from life, from the horror of life. God will shield us from trials and tribulations. But we see very clearly in our scripture today and in scriptures that we read throughout the year that sometimes that's just not the case. And believe it or not, we're fortunate for that. We're fortunate for that because we do not have a God who barters his grace for our faith, love, and devotion. We're fortunate enough to have a God who inserted God's own self into the human story so that we're not separate from God. We're fortunate enough to have a God who put on human flesh and inserted himself into suffering and felt human suffering so that God would know what human suffering is like. We're fortunate enough to have a God who journeys with us through grace, whether we like it or not, whether we know it or not, whether we understand it or not, or accept it or not, and whether we've paid for it or not. We are fortunate to have a God who does not barter, who does not barter grace and love for our faith and devotion. We're fortunate. Job, in our story, sits among the ashes, tending his physical and emotional wounds. At this point in the story, his livestock, his servants, his children, and now his health have either been killed or taken away from him. This is unbelievable loss. This is unbelievable grief. And naturally, in a situation like that, there must be a lot of searching for God. There must be a lot of wondering of, where is God in all of this? And there are two ways of looking at a situation like Job's. I want to look, I've got a sign here, and I want to look at Job's wife first, because she's the first way of dealing with a situation like Job's. Okay, this is Job's wife's sign. It says, God is nowhere. Oops, sorry. So, unable to see God at work at all, Job's wife suggests that Job should curse God and die. In the context of the horror she has seen and the horror she's experienced, remember, those were her children who were killed too. In her grief, she says, God is nowhere. Curse God and die. And now Job actually has a point of view as well, and it's this same sign. Can you read it? Try it one more time. If you look at it again, you might see that it also says, God is now here. God is now here. In the midst of remarkable grief, in the midst of remarkable pain, Job recognizes that life is full of both beauty and atrocity. In the midst of his horror, he recognizes that life is not just horror, but holiness as well. The sign, you see, is the same. And yet, in his grief and in his wondering where God is, Job still says, God is now here. I'd like to close with one of my favorite spirituals. I pray that it may nurture you through the horrors and beauties of this life. As we contemplate together which sign we hold up at different times. When the storms of life are raging, stand by me. When the storms of life are raging, stand by me. When the world is tossing me like a ship on the sea, thou who rulest wind and water, stand by me.